This is Talk Is Cheap. I'm your host, DJ Susti. I've studied sustainable design now for about 35 years, and so, of course, that's why I drive 14 hours, listen to the news for 14 hours a day, driving truck. So, I've been doing Talk Is Cheap now for since about 94. And back around that time, I did an interview with the Revenuer, who sells alcohol fuel stills. So today I'm going to play you that lecture and the thing I did on patents. There's a book back in the 30s written about the Nazis and international agreements and patents and how they would make these agreements with industrialists and then break the agreements. Similar to these international treaties that we have today. So, just a couple of words, though, before a couple of a little bit of a rant here before I go into that. Truckers, just to let you know, the trucker associations actually want to raise the fuel tax to pay for infrastructure, because they've come out in favor of raising the fuel tax, because you know, they'd rather pay a tax on fuel than have to repair their trucks from the damaged roads. And every time there's a bridge out, they can't make a delivery and it costs them money. Every time a train crashes onto the freeway, like it did up here in Tacoma, it costs them money. And that just reminds me, I found out, I was reading the Dos Passos trilogy, and I found out I've been driving over the bridge where they hung the Wobblies in, it's called the Centralia Massacre. So I've been driving through Centralia where the veterans and the Wobblies got in a fight, and they hung a guy and killed three Wobblies during a Veterans Day parade. Why veterans and labor do not get together, I do not know. But anyway, I digress. So, and then a word on these tariffs. I'm actually in favor of tariffs because I think we should localize everything, but I'm sure Trump will screw that up. And what I predict is that the military industrial complex will be able to buy steel from China, and ironically, China will be bombed with their own steel one day. So, my take on that is, taxes. There's a guy named, used to be on Wall Street Week, I think it was, Lou Rukhauser came out with a book called What's Next for the Economy. And so this isn't a far-fetched, zany, wacky idea at all. It's kind of mainstream. What you do is you tax things that you want to discourage, like low wages, environmental destruction, and dumping. You tax companies that use that type of stuff, and then you give tax breaks to people that don't do that. Kind of basic stuff, really don't need regulations, and there would probably be a bureaucracy created to enforce this, but you know, if people were better informed as to what they were buying and what they're buying is sourced, you might not need such a huge bureaucracy. We had a realistic news media. King Jong Il in Korea. I predict he will poison Trump at the meeting. And just to remind everyone, George W. Bush Jr. Tore up the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. So, like to see a return to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, please. And then Netanyahu, he's been in the news lately. What a pig this guy is. I just want to say there's a whole myriad of information on Israel, and I'm not far from an expert on Israel, but I've been looking up, looking at the Likud party. What my research has found is, believe it or not, they were based as a fascist organization, and now hear me now and listen to me later. Please use your own brain at all times and research this stuff yourself. The Arabs, because the British took over the Palestinian and Middle East after World War I, the Arabs were looking for anyone that would be the, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So there were Arabs that wanted the Jews to emigrate from Nazi Germany over into Palestine, what would become Palestine and the Middle East, because they were against the British occupation of the Middle East, because the British were there to try to extract oil from the area and basically imperialism and colonializing that area. So, believe it or not, there were the Likud party is its roots are in a fascist group that wanted to start a fascist state in Palestine based on Mussolini's model of a government. So the reason I'm saying this is because the Likud party, I have nothing against the Jews, I have nothing against Israel, but the Likud party would be a major problem. And there was just they were just playing a Chomsky on KBOO, and what he's saying is the same thing, that the Likud party, there is a third, there's the one-state solution, there's two-state solution, then there's a third option, which would be a one-state fascist state. And that's the main thing we don't want. So I'm afraid that's the direction we're headed with Israel, and we need to do something about the Likud party. Apparently there's a, we're talking about a workers' strike in October. So what I'll be coming up with in the next few weeks is the demands we want from corporations when we have a workers' strike. And plus I found my archive of tapes from the Conference in Corporate Dominance in 1999, so I'll be playing stuff from that. But today, alcohol, fuel, and patents. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. Talk is cheap. Know your enemy.
Terry Wilhelm of the River Newark Company, who manufactures alcohol stills from 5-gallon tabletop sizes to 1,000-gallon commercial plants, heated by electricity, wood-fired propane, or natural gas. Quote, by enabling our customers to produce their own alcohol fuel, strengthens our country's strategic position in the foreign oil industry market, according to Terry Wilhelm, owner of the Revenuer Company. Compared to gasoline, which emits carbon monoxide, alcohol emits only CO2, which is essential to plant life and water. Alcohol has a much higher octane rating, 108, than gasoline. Products like the Revenuer Company are an important part of the growing market for self-sufficiency, estimated by market research analysts to be growing rapidly in the coming years. More and more companies are using alcohol stills like this in bottom-line mission-critical applications, says Wilhelm. Revenuer stills can also be used to reclaim and purify waste solvents, thinners, acetones, and can be a major player in this arena. So this is an interview with Terry Wilhelm that I did recently. Thanks for listening.
Tell
your friends.
Who you are and what you do?
My name is Terry Wilhelm, Revenuer Company. We build all copper alcohol stills in capacity from 5 to 1,000 gallons. We're located in Oregon, and this is our 29th year of business.
But you just bought the Revenuer, I thought.
Correct. The company will actually be about 35 years old next year. The previous owners are still very much involved with the company, although not as far as the production, more on the design side.
Okay, and so you've been into alcohol for 35 years. What's the history of alcohol use? Is it true that Henry Ford originally designed his cars to run on alcohol?
Yes, that is true. And what kind of transpired towards gasoline was basically the oil companies having a byproduct that they couldn't get rid of, which is actually gasoline.
Well, when they were making kerosene?
Yes. But that's true. Henry Ford never intended the car to run on gasoline.
But, I mean, people used alcohol because they produced, that was the only way they could get fuel, was they had to produce it themselves.
Correct. And once again, we're going back a little bit before the oil companies had figured out how to do a lot different other than, like, stove oils and kerosenes, yeah.
Okay, so I guess let's go right into, cars can run on alcohol, any car can run on alcohol fuel that runs on gasoline?
Yes, it can. Brazil went to 100%. About 30 years ago, to my knowledge, and I believe this is still true, they don't have any petroleum cars at all. As far as conversion and anything can run, yes. Pretty much any race car you see nowadays is running on a version of some sort of an alcohol, whether it's ethanol or methanol. And that's been going on pretty much since the beginning of racing time.
Okay, so what about the new cars? I just read an article that they can put a computer chip in a car that'll adjust itself automatically for alcohol.
That's correct, too. And a few weeks ago, I looked at one of the new GMC Suburbans, which is called an all-fuel vehicle. And there's nothing that the driver needs to do, whether he's filling it up with an ethanol blend or regular gasoline, the computer sensing what it is and adjusting the timing and the fuel delivery rate.
Wow, so is that an option or is that standard?
It was standard on this vehicle just because it was an all-fuel vehicle.
So otherwise I'd have to order it from the factory, do you think, or are they sitting on showroom floors?
Well, the one I saw was it was sitting outside. That was in a large Suburban, and then looking at the Ford dealers, there are some Tauruses and some Rangers, and I haven't seen a full-size vehicle yet, but I have seen the Taurus and the Rangers on the lot.
But so where am I going to get this chip, though? Can I go down to my dealership and ask him for a computer chip?
I believe that not only is that true and that they'll probably install it, but I also believe that Superchips is now burning chips for that purpose, too. I haven't talked to them in quite a while. I know that they were looking at it several months ago.
Okay, and but if you have an old car with a carburetor, it's just a matter of changing the jetting?
Actually, an old car with a carburetor or a lawnmower or a rototiller or any of that is very easily. Something on a very small engine size, really all you're doing is screwing out the airflow metering just a little bit. Alcohol is thicker than gasoline, so you need to have a little bit more quantity going in. On a carbureted engine, the first rule of thumb is to open up the jets one-third. And if you're going to kind of fine-tune it from there, you can go from there. But that's usually the first general rule of thumb is just enlarge the jets one-third.
Okay, and then but alcohol burns faster than gasoline, right? I don't get as good a gas mileage.
Alcohol burns cleaner and hotter. Your mileage is a function of the amount of alcohol you're using. You're going to need more alcohol per gallon, but that usually typically isn't everybody's question. And what their concern is, am I going to get more mileage on alcohol than I am on gasoline? Basic answer to that is no. The other side of that is you can be making your own alcohol, usually, even if you're having to buy your products at a retail price cheaper than you're buying a gallon of gasoline.
And plus my performance is better.
Yes. Without any major modifications to your engine will perform better. Although there are a lot of things you can then do to an engine that will make it respond better, and more on the power side than the gasoline response.
And is there a corrosion problem with running alcohol? Does it corrode my cylinders?
No.
Earlier?
No.
There's water in gasoline also, right? Gasoline has water in it.
True. The alcohol that runs best really on a non-modified engine is somewhere in the area of 150-160 proof. And in a lower compression engine, the amount of water that's still in that, roughly being 20-25%, has more of a cooling effect on the cylinder.
So it's going to last longer.
Correct. You'll find, if you're watching something that close on an engine that's converted, you'll find that it runs a little bit cooler, and it's also running a lot quieter.
Okay, and what about, do I have to warm the fuel still? Doesn't alcohol freeze at a lower rate than gasoline?
No, alcohol will not freeze. The problem with alcohol on a carbureted engine is when you start getting down to cold temperatures at 30, it does not want to vaporize as nicely as the gasoline will. If you're thinking about a carbureted engine, there's a couple different ways to do it. If you set it up as dual fuel, you can always start it on gasoline and switch it over to alcohol. Or the easiest thing to do is to, and there's several ways to go about this, but to be able to just put a squirt of gasoline into the engine as you're starting it when it's cold, and then it'll run great on the alcohol.
Because it's warm by then. But this doesn't happen with fuel injection?
No. The fuel injection it's going in there at about 56 PSI, so it's atomizing it pretty good.
Okay, and so what about the rumor, the theory that there isn't enough biomass on the Earth? If we were to switch over totally to alcohol, would we have enough biomass to meet our needs?
Well,
I know they said that about Brazil, and they only do 10% of their land is devoted to agriculture.
Well, not only that, but in the United States, there's a lot of farmland that's not being used anymore because it just doesn't pay anything to be farmed.
And literally anything can be made in, almost anything can be made into alcohol.
Anything that'll fermentate will. Even apples on the ground rotting, and I'm saying this staying away from wood products. Any fruits, any vegetables, all the grains.
Well, but I hear even cellulose can be done with, I guess, difficulty, huh?
Yes, it can be done. There's no difficulty. You just have a few extra steps. You got to have an extractor. in order to get basically the stuff out of the alcohol before you can distill it. And it's not difficult. It's just a little bit higher price in the process than there is just making a simple corn moonshine whiskey.
Now, I've also read that this is actually, there's one article said that it's actually less polluting than electric power because they use gasoline, or less polluting than an electric car because they use gasoline to create electricity for electric, to charge electric vehicles.
Well, and then the byproduct that's coming out of an engine that's on alcohol is CO2. So the carbon dioxide basically is non-polluting at all. So the other thing that's worked pretty good, and we've heard from people that are using alcohol and the still to heat their greenhouses, so you've got the alcohol putting off carbon dioxide, and their reports is that it's really making the plants kind of take a different turn because they're actually being fed the carbon dioxide that they need rather than just getting it from the atmosphere.
Oh, because they're running the still off of alcohol fuel?
Yes, and they're heating the...
And the still is inside the greenhouse.
Right.
And so the carbon, because plants use carbon dioxide.
Exactly.
All right, and so are there any tax incentives going on to get us to use alcohol fuel?
There are federal, and there are several state. Each individual state has a little bit different things going on, but there's a federal tax credit. A lot of the states right now, the tax credit goes against your property tax instead of basically your end-of-the-year taxes. So, But it changes so much. We used to publish it in one of the books that comes with our stills, and it changes so much it's just hard to keep up with. But the easiest thing I ask people to do is just go find their state website and look around for whatever they have for credits. Or for tax breaks. Normally you'll find, if you sit down between what you get from federal incentives, if you're going to buy a still in any sort of a form of a production as a business, by the time you have the capital costs and the credits and the tax credits for producing alcohol as a fuel, before you've even turned it on, you've just about gotten yourself back to zero with your investment. So It does do real good.
I didn't, and so I just need a permit from the ATF?
Correct. It's Form 5110.74, and it's an alcohol fuel producer's permit. A small-scale operation is 0 to 50,000 gallons, and it's a free permit and takes about 62 days to get approved.
And it doesn't cost me anything?
Doesn't cost a thing.
And so I can produce 50,000 gallons at my house, basically.
Exactly.
And we talked about this before. Homeowners insurance doesn't seem to have a problem with it because it's less flammable than gasoline.
Exactly. normally, you know, if you're getting into something that kind of a production size, you're not doing it in your house. Mainly because you're talking about taking up a little bit of space if you were to. Excuse me, be producing 50,000 gallons, but yes, the permit is up to a 50,000 gallon capacity.
All right, and you've got a still that'll produce 5 gallons a day with by plugging it into an electric socket?
Yeah.
Runs off electricity or propane?
Our 5 and 10 gallons run on 110, and they're available in propane also. And then starting our 25 gallons, they're wired 240.
All right, and any suggestions on where to get biomass cheap?
You know, that varies quite a bit throughout the country. To answer that in a simple answer, no, I don't.
Well, let me put it this way, too. I was looking at the microbreweries. When I was up in Oregon, there's microbreweries, and they had all this spent grain.
Yes.
Is spent grain going to work, or has that already been taken, has everything been taken out of it already?
No, it would work. They've used it to make the beer, and there's still starches and sugars and protein in that could be used again.
Because, I just see them throw huge buckets of it away.
Yeah, they either give it away or pay people to take it away, usually.
All right, and so what do you think about
the oil wars, and how does this relate to the oil wars? Do you think we wouldn't have to go to war if we all switched to alcohol fuels? Or?
Well, we went through this back in 73 once already. There was a big jump to make alcohol due to the shortage that we had going on. I think the Bush administration and the government's pushing it from a different direction this time, rather than and it's going to take some infrastructure throughout the United States to get into alcohol anyway, but there's already an E85 blend out there, which is there's two different ways of an E85 at 85% alcohol and an E85 at 15%. And most states now are already blending 10% alcohol into the gasoline, and that's done basically to stretch the amount of gasoline farther without doing anything so drastic that the cars need to be looked at kind of seriously as far as the full conversion over to alcohol.
Yeah, any legislators that are pro alcohol that we should be looking at? Legislation coming up?
By name, no. Like I said, the Bush administration is really starting to push. We're seeing more and more large ethanol plants springing up throughout the U.S. than we did in the last 8 years. And the interest for us on the smaller size that we build has really drastically gone up in the last year and a half.
So it's on the rise.
Yeah, our looking at our numbers from the last 12 months previous to the previous 12 months, our sales have gone up 30 times.
Is that right? And so what's involved in getting a still from you? You ship it to the person?
Right. Normally, 5, 10, and 25-gallon stills, we normally try and keep in stock so that they can be shipped immediately. Although it's been pretty difficult, and with the holiday season, it's been really difficult to kind of keep up with the demands. So it's a little seasonal for us, and it has a tendency to taper off and be able to get caught back up. But yes, if somebody calls us up and buys it and pays for it, and, you know, we discuss pretty much how soon or how they want it as far as shipped. Our 5-gallon still actually goes out in a cardboard box, and it can pretty much be shipped anyway. The 10 gallons on up are put in wooden crates and are shipped freight.
And is there a lot of assembly involved?
No. You can pretty much put just about any size still up to the 300-gallon together with 2 8-inch adjustable wrenches.
Mm-hmm. And then you sell all the equipment and supplies that go with it?
Yes.
Mash recipes?
Yes. Every still that we sell has a 208-page book that has recipes in it for making the mash, information about converting cars, has a copy of the permit, talks about using different products to make alcohol, some history of the alcohol. And then also every still we provide a pound and a half of yeast, alcohol hydrometer, which is 0 to 200 proof, a triple scale hydrometer, a vinometer, a beaker, and pH test strips for you to check the water. So when it comes to you, the only thing you need to do is buy a sack of corn and a sack of sugar and mix it up according to what we recommend for a recipe.
Wow. And I see your smallest one is $1,000, which that's, and it's all made out of copper.
Correct.
So that's a pretty good deal.
Something that I try and keep people to keep in mind, our 5-gallon still functions the exact same way as a 1,000-gallon still. So if they're a little hesitant about the money situation, buy a 5 or 10-gallon still and see how it works and how it functions and get comfortable with it. And providing that it's in a fairly decent shape, we always take our stills back into trade for usually the full price if they're in good shape in order to upgrade to the whatever, next size or several sizes up from that. So I try and keep it so that if $1,000 is easy for you to do to get into it and think that, you know, someday I want something 10 times as big, you know, then spend $1,000 and play around with it and see, okay, this is how it works. And like I said, if it's, we've taken back some pretty rough ones on trade. Granted, they didn't come back at full purchase price, but we'll always take them back on trade.
And then, so what's involved in a large still? You will come out to the site and do a turnkey operation?
If that's what's needed, sure. And that's usually something in a large system, like a 1,000-gallon still or larger. One, it's several months planning and several months in the production phase, too. So on-site setup is certainly something that we'll offer if the person needs.
But you said you beat someone's price. I can't remember what it was, where you just set up several thousand-gallon stills in a row, and you beat someone's... Whose price was it? Not Archer Daniels Midland.
Well, the thing that we try and do as a company is to cater more towards the people that are looking something on the smaller size. Our 1,000-gallon still system will produce 100,000 gallons a year, 24 hours a day running. If 100,000 gallons isn't enough and you need to get up to 1 million gallons, what we do is we just start taking our 1,000-gallon stills and modularly build them together. There are several companies out there, and not to name them, they're easy to find, that will put together a system for you that will make 1 million gallons a year on up. The other side of that is they're looking at 10 to 15 million to put the plant together and usually 3 or 4 years to build it. Our 100,000 gallon a year system right now is 109,000, and we should be able to put that together and have it set up in 6 months' time.
All right, and then just out of curiosity, all this technology comes from moonshiners, right? Where was this invented? Was this invented during Prohibition, or it's been around longer than that, I guess?
Oh, the Egyptians were making beer and alcohol.
But I mean, were you a moonshiner? Can you say that?
Well, no, I wasn't. I'm still a little too young for that, but there are 3 generations of moonshiners in the family, so
okay.
We'll probably leave it at that.
All right, so Terry Wilhelm of the Revenue or Alcohol Stillmaker, thank you very much.
I appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Bye.
This is the Kill Radio non-corporate, non-soundbite, non-violent news.
Society is only possible on the basis of poverty and ignorance. In principle, the war effort is always planned to keep society on the brink of starvation. The war is waged by the ruling group against its own subjects, and its object is not victory over Eurasia or East Asia, but to keep the very structure of society intact.
Right, this is how corporations came to power, and how the news media does not go back far enough to the Versailles Treaty and other things when they report things. And so this is how corporations came to power, and how they are maintaining power to this day. This is Gunther Reimann, Patents for Hitler, from 1942, or 45, or whatever, and it's available at your public library. There's this place where you can get books for free. They'll loan you just about any book you want. When Adolf Hitler stood poised upon the brink of the adventure that was to make him ruler of most of Europe and bring him closer to world dominion than mortal man had ever been before, he counted upon a secret weapon of which the world had little suspicion. It was not a fearful death ray, a motorless plane drawing its power by wireless, or a mysterious poison gas of unparalleled deadliness. The secret weapon of the Third Reich consisted of the spider web of cartels, patent exchanges, licensing arrangements, divisions of territory, etc., concluded between German industrial concerns and those of other nations, most notably with American corporations. Agreements which were cunningly devised to develop in Germany the new synthetic industries on which total war depends, and to stifle or limit the output of these same industries in other countries. In following this policy, German corporations were allowed and even encouraged to ally themselves with foreign, particularly American, companies. The latter often accepted Nazi aid in order to obtain monopolist control over strategic industries in America. If, at the time of the attack on Pearl Harbor and the loss of American source of raw rubber in the East Indies, we found ourselves without preparations for synthetic rubber industry, but with a paper claim on patents, the reason for this is easily found in an international arrangement that gave to this country a document and hypothetical profits in the future, and to Hitler an expanded and fortified synthetic rubber industry in the present. If, when the United States entered the war, it found a large armament plant honor bound not to sell certain of its products to the British Empire, if it discovered that another plant had furnished data which enabled the German General Staff to keep an accurate check on United States Naval and Air Corps expansion, it found itself with inadequate sources of the light metals without which an air force is impossible. All these handicaps can be traced to commercial arrangements of the same type. These arrangements produced other strange phenomena. Thus, we find important secrets concerning the production of synthetic rubber were actually revealed to Nazi Germany, though they were concealed from the U.S. Navy Department. And perhaps most surprising of all, at the time of Pearl Harbor, royalties on aviation gasoline sold to the RAF were to be put aside to be paid to the giant German concern IG Farben after the war. And of course, the banks, this is me talking now, the book goes on to tell you that the banks were able to loan on that money, and they could make arrangements on that money as collateral that they were going to be paid after the war. So this is how corporations came to power, and how they continue to maintain power through cartels and international agreements, and one of these days we'll all be working for the same company, and how American corporations supported fascists because the communists wanted things like minimum wage and human rights and stuff like wacky stuff like that, So instead, the industrialists supported the fascists, and they still do. And they have become, and the fascists have basically taken over. So, yeah. Use your own brain. Stop, this is a big news, Brzezinski.